Today, we're gathered here to celebrate the lives of the characters and the amazing storytelling and music of one of the greatest animation programs ever produced. Originally in its three forms, Macross, the Southern Cross, and of course Mospita, it became the amazing Robotech, a trilogy of anime we love to watch every morning before going to school. This was an amazing program which was a step above all the others because it was a human story. It was our story. Oh, Veritex, this is Skull One. Proceed into Guardian mode.
Yeah, right. No worries, Governor. Switch into Guardian mode.
Switch into Guardian mode, sir. No worries, sir.
All right, Lee, sir. This one's for you.
I'm sitting here waiting. Contemplating what's the best day. Watching that movie. I'm the leader moment.
G'day, mate. How you going? I'm Adam O'Brien. Welcome to the show. I am the Lethal Mullet, and of course, this is Lethal Mullet Podcast live on Lethal Mullet Network and brought to you from, of course, Quinlan's Canteen in the Gold Coast of Australia on this bright and sunny Saturday morning here, of course. And I've got to say, folks, we're going to be chatting about something that is near and dear to my heart, something that I grew up watching, something that I continue to watch at least on an annual basis here in Australia. And it's a great series, spawned a franchise which is still going to this day, spawned merchandise from everything from role-playing games to toys to games and a myriad of books as well. What we're talking about, of course, is Robotech. Okay, a great series which was created by Harmony Gold with, of course, the creator there, Carl Masek, putting this together. Where it was taking three previous anime and putting them together in an English translation from the original Japanese, but also giving it a new story as well. So you could put three previously unrelated animation shows together, or anime as they're called in Japan, and creating a much larger mythology. And a very interesting and fun one it is. You know, these are three series alone themselves are just as interesting. That is, of course, Macross, which has spawned its own franchise, obviously. The Southern Cross, and, of course, the other one that I really like in this, particularly from a mecha angle and just characters, and is definitely the continuation point from a lot of the, let's just say, the stuff that they wish that they could fully continue into a series. But we did get some interesting stuff, and that is, of course, the new generation, or, in this case, Mospita. Okay, so those three completely different. So, Super Dimensional Fortress Macross, Super Dimensional Cavalry Southern Cross, and then, of course, Mospita, Genesis Climber. What's interesting is if you get a chance to watch these original versions as well with the original Japanese, the music's completely different. And again, it's similar story to some points within that contained area, but still different all the same. But you can see what Carl had to work with to create what he did with, of course, Robotech, and what an amazing series. We're going to chat about that. We're going to chat about also the voice cast, which to this day I'm still friends with at least about three or four of them online regularly, particularly Richard Epcar and Ellen Stern Epcar, who are just the most amazing people. And, you know, this was all formative for them in their careers. And, you know, for us as fans and people that watch this stuff growing up, it was also formative for us because it's got so much in it, in those stories, which is, you know, based around creating your own moral compass, you know, things like sacrificing for your friends and, you know, in a state of war, emergency, stuff like that, you know. So we'll get into that sort of stuff. Talk about all the, obviously, the talent behind it and right up through to what we love about it. Joining me tonight to chat about it a little bit later is the co-creator of the FPN Network. That's the Phantom Podcast Network. And his name is Kyle Wagner. Kyle will be coming on to chat about his love of the franchise. And he's a big Gundam fan as well, as you probably know from a previous episode we did with him. That's all going to be here tonight on the one, the only Lethal Mullet Podcast. G'day mate, how you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host Mark Newbold into a deep dive of Star Trek. You'll also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis. And where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favourite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema. And now, it's time for the news here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. All right, folks. Let's chat about one of the more interesting things from the 1980s that's making a bit of a comeback. Of course, that is Masters of the Universe, and this is all going to be put together by the one and only Silent Bob. That's right, from View Askew. Well, the real guy, anyway. Kevin Smith is producing the new series of Masters of the Universe, which has been, whoa, what is it, 30 plus years in the making? Well, we've had other incarnations of Masters of the Universe, plus a movie with Dolph Lundgren. Now we're going to have the, let's just say, the immediate sequel to the original series, which was on TV in the early 80s, about 83 to 85, roughly. Now there's been other sequels, The New Adventures of He-Man, there's been other He-Man animated shows right through to the 2000s as well, which is really interesting. But this one is called Masters of the Universe Revelations. And it's going to take pretty much what was happening in the last series and answer it. Basically wrap up all the story leads. It's going to take things to a dark and a much murkier grey area than you've seen on the original show, which was, you know, definitely not that sort of area. So we're very interested to see how this goes. Now, all I've seen is a couple of trailers, and I've got to say the animation has overall captured at least what we used to see with Masters of the Universe itself. I'm quite interested to see where it goes, but I will say this, the merch that's coming out is really interesting, and I'm finally going to get a Battle Cat and a He-Man. I am determined to find them. It's hard to get these, are they Super 7 series, I think they're called, He-Man figures, Masters of the Universe, there's Skeletor, Man-at-Arms, Teela, I believe, we've all got Beastman, and you've also got Trapjaw, there's a few others coming through the lines, but I'm hoping a couple of the vehicles come through too, because they were a lot of fun. So this weird Conan the Barbarian meets Star Wars-like universe that Masters of the Universe inhabitates, you know, it's really, really interesting, and folks, let's get back into this classic 80s era. Hey, mate, how you going? Come on in, mate. Yeah, yeah. What shall it be?
Oh, yeah. Man, it's been real busy day, you know? Oh, wow.
Right,
yeah.
I'm like, hey.
Yeah.
It's just like I was telling my mate the other day, you know, have a nice, you know, cold beverage.
Here you go, mate. Here, enjoy this beverage and enjoy this film chat.
G'day, mate. Here you go. Welcome to Lethal Mullet Podcast, live here on the Lethal Mullet Network, brought to you by the amazing Studio Quinlan's Cantina, and of course, brought to you by Fandom Podcast Network. We just happen to have tonight, as the guest here on the show to celebrate Robotech, one of the greats, one of the all-rounders, and the power behind
the production itself of Fandom Podcast Network, co-creator and all-round cool dude, coming all the way from Florida in the United States of America, the one, the only, Kyle Wagner.
Oh, it's good to be back on the mullet, even though I'm staring down a hurricane, possibly hitting me in the next day or two. But hey, you know what? You got to take some time out to talk some Robotech, especially when it's on the lethal mullet.
You got to do that. And the fact that, too, you guys are having it really hard right now with that coming on your back. We out here in Australia have a different hurricane. It's called Little Mr. COVID, Little Mr. Delta COVID, who's just going rampant like crazy and kicking us in the nuts.
Yeah, no, it's not one thing. It's another, but luckily we have some good distractions to keep us occupied. In fact, I experienced one today that I wanted to bring up with you real quick. Are you familiar with the Amazon Prime, Amazon original film that debuted actually here in the United States today with one Chris Pratt, The Tomorrow War?
I've heard of the name, and when I first saw the name, I actually thought it was a sequel to an Australian film, Tomorrow When the War Began.
Well, this was a film that was supposed to hit U.S. theaters, but because of COVID, the studio sold the rights of it off to Amazon, and the film with Chris Pratt in the lead, it hit today on Amazon streaming services here in the U.S., and I believe internationally as well. A very fun sci-fi flick with some of the better designed alien monsters I've seen in a good while. So I just wanted to throw this out there to the people in Mulletland. Go check out The Tomorrow War. Is it a perfect sci-fi film? No, but it's a good, fun film. If you have Amazon Prime, it's free. You can watch it. And like I said, some really cool alien creature designs in The Tomorrow War. And it's Chris Pratt, so you know you
can. Pratt's great. I like his. He's got a real whimsical and, if anything, straight-up sense of humor in each of his roles, you know, whether it's in the Marvel Universe or I actually quite liked him in The Magnificent Seven.
He was very enjoyable on that. I think he's one of the more interesting stars we have right now because he can do serious and comedy, but can do a little bit of action too. And actually, that brings me up to a quick question I have for you, Mr. Lethal Mullet, Mr. Man of Action. Do you truly believe right now we have an action star out there that is truly on the level of like a Stallone or a Schwarzenegger that really is the personification of what a mullet action star would be? Do we have that superstar action star? I know a lot of people might say Jason Statham, but Jason Statham is 53 years old.
He is. If there's going to be one out of the current bunch, all right, it would be Scott Adkins because he's that little bit younger than all of them and his star is on the rise with some other material. Although, unfortunately, his star is more in the B-grade and straight-to-video markets. Do we have something that's higher than that? No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, because Adkins, I mean, I'm an Adkins fan too, but yeah, he hasn't really gotten into that Hollywood movie outlet. No, you don't see him in a lot of big screen theaters. He did some great work on direct to DVD and direct to streaming. And he's definitely, I think, considered one of the top, you know, if you're going to see an action star. But, you know, I think there's a couple of people who are right there that if they get the right project, I think could really translate. And what, of course, I'm going to talk about one of our guys is our boy from The Raid, Iwasu.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Because he's getting more and more U.S. roles. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just a matter of time. Especially once he gets a little bit more mastery of the English language, he could really step up and be an action superstar. Are you familiar at all with the show Warrior?
I've heard of it, yeah. So this is the one that's taking the actual conceived notions of what Bruce was trying to put together, what became Kung Fu. So the Kung
Yes,
Fu TV
exactly.
Show.
I just got done watching it, and there's a gentleman there, a couple of people. Of course, our other half of our Raid guys, Joe Taslim, is in this, and he, of course, was in Mortal Kombat recently. He's another one on the rise. But Andrew Koji is a name to watch because he's lead in Warrior.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He's the lead in Warrior, and he's phenomenal in that, but he is also playing Storm Shadow in the upcoming Snake Eyes film.
Oh, fantastic. He's great. The other one from that movie, Louis Tan playing Cole Young, the descendant of Scorpion, is actually very good in that movie. But the one to watch is an Aussie guy. He's a comedian out here and leading man, but he started getting into action films, folks. Josh Lawson, who played Kano Now, what I love about it is that there's a real 80s-style bravado and rebellious streak in him, yet he's skilled.
Now, I think the other big one we need to talk about, because I've been having this debate with our friend and my fellow co-founder here at the Fandom Podcast Network, is The Rock. And we both feel with The Rock is he's great in the action movies. He was great in Hobbs and Shaw. Mm-hmm. He was great in the Fast and Furious movies. But he hasn't had that franchise of his own. You know, like Stallone had Terminator and so many others. Or Stallone had Rocky and Rambo. Schwarzenegger had Terminator and so many, and a few others as well. But The Rock really hasn't had that key franchise yet. I always thought the character he needs to revisit that he could turn into a franchise character is Beck from The Rundown.
Yeah, I see, and that was out here, folks. That's called Welcome to the Jungle. Great flick, by the way. It really is
all-time favorites. Yeah, one of my all-time favorite fun flicks. Him and Sean William Scott have great chemistry. Christopher Walken is...
And?
Chris has got more cowbell in this than he has had in something in a good while. And, of course, the absolutely lovely Rosario Dawson is also in that film.
We're forgetting a very, very important part of that is, of course, Spud from Trainspotting. Coming in there, right-io, this is my mighty plane. Here we go, you know. And
but even more important, for those mullet fans is somebody I actually know, Ernie Reyes Jr.
Yes. From Mr. Sidekicks himself, you know, and all the other different stuff that Ernie has done over the years. Fantastic martial artist, folks. And, you know, we got to maybe look at his known stuff in there.
I've got to ask, is the mullet aware of my connection to Ernie Reyes Jr.?
The mullet is not currently aware of your connection. Is it high school?
No, actually, when I was living in Alaska, I was doing Taekwondo in Alaska as a wintertime activity because, you know, it's 60 below outside, you need something to do. Well, Ernie Reyes and Ernie Reyes Jr., this is when Ernie Reyes Jr. was very young, about Sidekick's age, maybe even a little bit younger, came up to Alaska, and it was his first time seeing snow, and because we were the same age, and I have my half-sister, we all went out and had a snowball fight together, so I had a snowball fight with Ernie Reyes Jr.
Oh, dude, this is awesome. And to our sensei, come in and say, what do you say, sensei? Oh, Kairu-san, totomo ii desu yo! Oh, taekwondo ga suki desu! Thank you, sensei. There we are. Oh, wow.
So I just wanted to bring up this conversation about current action stars, because it does seem interesting to me that we don't really have that signature action star right now.
We don't. Look, I'm gonna throw a few names out there of people that aren't there yet but are getting there. So we've mentioned Louis Tan, definitely somebody that I think just is great. Joe Taslim, his exposure in The Raid is a perfect example of where he needs to go. We've got people like Donnie and all that are still going, but they're already legends, you know, particularly in their own community. The other one is Frank Grillo, who seems to get good movies, then he gets bad ones, and he has that sort of Italian-American bravado. There's a real fire in him, but there's also, this guy can act. We saw it in Warrior, the movie, you know, he out-acted Tom Hardy, respectively, you know, for what it was.
And it looked for a while like The Purge might become he might become kind of the star of The Purge franchise as well.
Yeah. I mean, he's a great, I think personally, a great actor. And he's shown that he's able to do the choreography given to him. Not sure about any of his, you know, martial arts background. I'm sure he's done some because it certainly looks like he can. But between that, you've got Scott Adkins still battling on, and I think people need to give him a chance in a much bigger film leading it.
Yeah, I think he needs that chance. I just don't know what the film is. I think that's the other thing. It's a hard time for Hollywood right now because they're still trying to kind of come back from COVID. And we really, truly still don't know what the future holds for how movies are going to be made going forward. I think we are going to be looking at the theater experience will still be there, but it's going to be more for blockbuster films. You're not going to see these middle of the ground movies going to the theater. I think they really are going to be going to more streaming content because these studios want content for their own services and a way to bring people to their subscriptions. And, you know, I heard it on another podcast, and it's a very valid point about these streaming services and why they're going to start doing this is they make more money having a month-to-month subscriber than they do putting out two or three movies in a box in the box office throughout the year.
Yeah, they do. I mean, it's just a different rung. They're looking at things like documentaries now. Now, I shared this with you guys offline here. In 2016, an Australian company and a couple others came up with a mockumentary by the name of Top Knot Detective. This is a really interesting, very mullet movie, folks, even though this is a documentary slash mockumentary. What if they did the likes of Spinal Tap in a Japanese martial arts comedy series and put the real world spin on it? This is what you're getting. So I'll give you a bit of the blurb here when you Google it. Takashi Takamoto begins writing jingles for a well-known Japanese company and ends up creating a bloody series of samurai action that over time becomes a cult series. What this documentary or mockumentary goes on about is the life of this crazy writer, all of his shenanigans with the Yakuza. And of course, you know, in all good fashion, it's a great rip-roaring story, hilarious. I was on my ass laughing, folks, you know, R-O-F-L-L, whatever you call that in that language. It was hilarious. But this is, of course, a mockumentary. Got to check it out. For you out there that haven't seen it, this is something that's burning up all the film festivals, so it's definitely popular.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because I think documentaries have really come to a forefront over the last couple of years. So it's interesting to see how that's going.
Certainly is. Now, before we get into our chat here at the bar, folks, we've got to say you have to check out our merch. That's right. Lethal Mullet now has merch. We have coffee mugs. We have sweaters. We have hoodies. We have t-shirts. Go grab yourself one, and as you listen to the show, you can slap that on and say, Lethal Mullet! That's right. You can scream along with us on the show. You're going to love it, I tell you. Hey, look, Kyle's wearing one right now.
I am. I thought I was wearing a Tampa Bay Lightning jersey, but yeah, I know where you can find all... I know where you can find all that stuff. It's called tpublic.com. Search for the Fandom Podcast Network or search for Lethal Mullet, and you're going to find the gear of all those things. And they're constantly having sales this summer. So you need, and I got to say, the Lethal Mullet shirt is sharp. There's a couple different versions of it up there. So snag that, the shirt. You can get a hoodie. You can get some, get all kinds of stuff. Tpublic.com, where you can find the Lethal Mullet and all the gear of the Fandom Podcast Network.
Definitely, definitely. All right, folks, 1985 was the year, and it was a year of amazing animation, particularly on Saturday mornings. And here in Australia, we had Master of the Universe going, we had Smurfs, we had all this sort of funny stuff happening, all this Transformers that were coming out, all this stuff. But then, all of a sudden, comes a weekly show, Monday to Friday and on Saturday mornings, called Robotech. And we saw the life of Rick Hunter, Lisa Hayes, Roy Fogger, Ben Dixon, and of course, Max Sterling versus Zanthrodi. This is an amazing show which was groundbreaking in terms of storytelling. It was a moral story, really showed sacrifice. Particularly, we never saw characters dying before in this way. You know, it really was true life, even though it was heightened by these massive 40-foot robots. This series went on to obviously make three series in total back in its original run, running for about, I think it was 85 episodes, if I remember right. That all made by, of course, Harmony Gold, and the creator of it is Carl Masek. Kyle, thoughts on looking back at when it first came out?
So I remember when Robotech first came out, I wasn't really getting it in the Saturday morning cartoon variant, as it was more through VHS videos for me. But Robotech is, and I mean most true anime, most anime fans know the story behind Robotech. Carl Masek wanted to bring something over from the Japanese because he thought it would be a big hit over here. But the problem was the shows that they did in Japan never went long enough to get full syndication. So what Carl Masek did was he got the rights to Super Dimensional Fortress Macross, one of the all-time greatest anime series in anime history, and tied it in with Super Dimensionary Cavalry Southern Cross and Genesis Climber Mos Betta, which in Robotech terms was the Robotech Master story arc and the New Generation story arc, and combined these shows into an 85-episode run called Robotech. And it was one of the biggest undertakings and still one of the biggest undertakings in anime at the time because he had to write scripts to interconnect all these shows. He did a phenomenal job with it, and it became one of the biggest shows in U.S. anime history, and really opened, was a gateway drug for a lot of people into anime, and brought us several key voice actors that are to this day still very powerful in anime, including the great Tony Oliver, and of course our friend here at the Lethal Moloch, Mr. Richard Epcar.
Not without a doubt. You know, folks, at the time, these voice actors were doing all of, obviously, Robotech, and also doing other productions like Dan Warren, for example, great Roy Foker, was also doing a lot of voiceover for behind-the-scenes productions. If you get the Blu-ray of Big Trouble in Little China and you watch the behind-the-scenes, guess who does the voiceover? Roy Foker himself.
Now, I think one of the big things, and I know we have talked about in the past on Lethal Moloch Robotech, but there's been some major developments in the licensing for Robotech and what's happening with Robotech. And if you're a lifelong Robotech fan, you have had to deal with the frustration of Harmony.
Well, with Harmony Gold, I've got to say that you know, they've tried a number of times to get projects off the ground over the years. So there's definitely a passion there to get Robotech out to the masses.
Robotech, so basically anything in the U.S. that is titled Robotech, Harmony Gold holds the rights to. That included for a very long time the original three shows for U.S. release of that combined Robotech. And, of course, we're talking about Macross, Genesis Climber, Mospeda, and Southern Cross. Now, over the years, they've worked out some things. They've gotten those original cuts of those shows over in the U.S. with Harmony Gold getting some cut out of it or working as a partnership, most notably with AD Vision when AD Vision released Robotech on DVD back in the day, including with a new English dub, which in that particular dub, the actual original Japanese voice actors of Minmay did the English voicing for Minmay in that dub for Macross. It wasn't the Robotech dub. It was the Macross dub.
Yeah, that's interesting. Actually, I've got to say, I've got Southern Cross and Mospeda in their original Japanese dubs, brought out by, of course, Harmony Gold. And those releases are quite magical for what they are, and you get to see the original edition.
The original show's licenses actually came up for expiration, and they worked a different deal. Yes, Harmony Gold is still somewhat involved, but there is now the freedom to bring Macross over.
Yeah, very tight situation then to get all that together, but great to see Macross coming over.
So we are now looking at the opportunity to bring Macross and all the other Macross series, including returning Macross 2, Macross Plus, as well as, for the first time ever, Macross 7, Macross Frontier, and Macross Delta to the U.S. Now, one of the big hang-ups that's going to be with this is not so much the rights of the shows themselves, but the cost of the music rights for these Macross shows, because music is a huge part of the Macross shows. But when we're talking what's happened with Robotech, yes, the Robotech license did get renewed by Harmony Gold. And there's been a lot of frustration because Harmony Gold has attempted several times to do new Robotech things. Most notably, probably the most recent thing was Robotech The Shadow Chronicles. And while that saw some success, it never really got picked up again. Things have worked out a little differently now, though, because Sony is involved. There are some very convoluted things about new Robotech animation being re-released until the live-action movie was going to be produced. Well, so now that Sony's been kind of involved, and one of the big things that Sony owns is the U.S. and Canadian anime distribution, Funimation, which in the U.S. is the biggest anime distributor in the country. Yeah. And because of the way they've worked deals now, because it's Sony, Robotech Animated is going to soon be streaming on Funimation's app. And even more importantly, Sony, working with Funimation and Harmony Gold, is in the process of cleaning up Robotech, restoring it, and giving us a Blu-ray transfer of Robotech at 1080p. It is still going to be in its original 4:3 aspect ratio, but like with a lot of anime over the last several years that have been upgraded to Blu-ray, most notably probably for a lot of you Cowboy Bebop, it needs to keep that 4:3 aspect ratio, or you're cutting out a lot of there, but there's still been a beautiful cleanup job on this. And if you're an anime fan, something to notice is a company called Discotech, which carries a lot of the old Central Park Media things like Cyber City, Oedo, and some of the Dominion Tank Police things, a lot of that. They're starting to do the same thing with a lot of those Blu-rays as well. And those are starting to come out, especially on Amazon and things like that. But Robotech coming out on a Blu-ray is something you would have asked most people a year ago, no way we would have ever seen this. And so now we have this Robotech set coming out that is not only going to include the Robotech 85 episode series, it's going to include Robotech 2 The Sentinels and the Shadow Chronicles film, which has been had a Blu-ray release, but there has not been a proper release of Robotech 2 The Sentinels since ADV did their Robotech collections, and it was an add-on bonus if you bought the individual Robotech box sets. Other than that, the only other release that the U.S. has ever seen of Robotech 2 The Sentinels was the Streamline Pictures VHS back in the day.
Totally. I mean, there's been some big additions of Robotech, particularly out here in Australia, under Madman Entertainment. They also did the Voltron line. Probably the biggest anime distributor in this part of the world. So we're getting ours not from the US sort of market. We're getting ours from straight from pretty much Asia. And what's interesting is we had one set called the Complete Set, or Robotech the Complete, which had all of the stuff plus the Robotech mm-hmm. movies. So you had Shadow Chronicles, you had Long Live Alive, or Love Live Alive, or whatever it was called. You also had, Sentinels as well, plus a whole bunch of new documentaries, which back in 2013, they actually had an event out here, which had Stephen from Harmony Gold come out, and they actually sat down and went through some of this new material, and obviously one of those was the new movie at the time, which had just been produced. What's great about it is, though, now we're going to get to see those in even clearer quality than we ever have.
Yeah, and, you know, here's the other thing with Robotech is, too, is not only are we going to get this clear quality, Robotech animation has actually held up, for the most part, very well over the years. Mm-hmm. One of the big benefits that happened when ADV kind of re-released their versions of Robotech was it was more of a increase in the sound and going to a bit, they were able to upgrade the sound to a stereo sound. Now with going to the Blu-ray, it's going to be interesting to see how much they can clean up the visuals on this, which leads to the other aspect of this, at least for people here in the US and Canada, and is the Funimation app. The Funimation app is also going to be streaming this new cut of Robotech as well. So if you're not looking to spend a massive amount of money it's going to be for this Robotech Blu-ray set, I think it's going to be running at least $200 here in the United States. You can stream it through the Funimation app, which is actually a fairly priced app at $6.99 a month when there's no commercials and that. And the entire Funimation library is basically on it. And there's so much Funimation has acquired over the years because Funimation in the US actually ended up purchasing the entire Pioneer catalog. And Funimation has also picked up several things from the Gundam catalog over the recent years as well, including Mobile Suit Gundam Seed, a lot of the more modern Gundam, like the Mobile Suit Origin, they're telling the origin of Char. They've also picked up a couple of the classic Gundam series, plus Gundam, if you're looking for streaming of Gundam in the US, you have Gundam Unicorn on Netflix, as well as now they've just recently acquired the original Mobile Suit Gundam films, and a special new Gundam that has not seen even a DVD release yet here in the United States. That is Mobile Suit Gundam Hathaway, which takes place after the events of Char's counterattack.
I mean, it's huge. They've got a lot of that happening right now. With one thing that I love that Harmony Gold has been doing is pumping up the amount of merch that Robotech has. And it's not just in one area. They're doing everything from board games. There's some really high-end board games, I've got to say, folks. Covering all the areas, there's an Invid one, a Masters one, and there's I think at least three Macross ones, which are actually really good. And then there's a brand new Robotech RPG that's been out for about a year and a half, 2 years now, which, again, it's not the Palladium one, it's a different style, and I do believe there's a second book coming as well.
Yeah, I know that they have really done a lot to get other Robotech merchandise out there. And I know that there's still been a little bit of Harmony Gold stepping on some shoes, especially when it comes to the RPG elements of Robotech. I know that they've had some issues with Palladium and such. But Robotech has done a very good job of getting Mile Kicks out, action figures, and the such. It's always going to be, I think, Adam, one of the weirdest licenses out there. And one of the more complicated ones. But I mean, we are talking about really one of the classic shows of anime in anime history, the gateway for a lot of people. When you talk about I've always considered there's probably about 3 to 4 major gateway shows for a lot of people who got into anime in the 80s. Now, in the 90s, there's a lot more things. You had Macross Plus, you had Cowboy Bebop, Outlaw Star, Trigun, so many, Dragon Ball Z, obviously, Bleach, Naruto,
Ghost in the 2000s. Shell.
Yeah, Ghost in the Shell. But as far as in the 80s go, you in the U.S., on the U.S. side of things, you had Robotech, you had Voltron, you had a little bit of Speed Racer in there, and then there you had an interesting thing that was on for a lot of people who on cable. It was called Force 5, and Force 5 was they took several old school anime mecha shows, Gai King, Star Avengers, Space Cadets, Vanguard Ace, and Grandizer, and took those shows and cut them into movies and put them out on cable. And that was a lot of people's gateway there. But I mean, really, truthfully, if you're going to talk about the gateway things, when you're talking early to mid 80s, you're talking Voltron, you're talking Robotech, you talk a little bit later in the 80s, you're talking Akira.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely, without a doubt. First, Force 5 was new to me. I'm just having a look at it now. So this is a series done by Jim Terry Productions, by the look of it.
Yeah, Gary Anderson was actually very involved in that as well.
And it says it was in response to the popularity of Shogun Warriors toy collection.
Yeah, and that's what spun it out. But yeah, but again, when it comes down to it, you are talking with Robotech, probably, again, a storyline that nobody had ever seen in a Saturday morning cartoon, which people thought it was at this point, with the mature themes it had, dealing with death, dealing with war and its outlook on war. But of course, too, when you're talking Robotech, you're obviously talking about some of the greatest mecha designs ever, probably the most famous being the Veritech fighter. As Adam is showing me a picture of the Shogun Warriors line that came out in the late 70s. Interesting note about the Shogun Warriors line, though. You had all the Shogun Warriors line, but one of the key components of that was Godzilla. Godzilla was part of the Shogun line and was actually designed to be kind of the character that the Shogun Warriors fought. So, very interesting there. But getting back to Robotech, you know, like I said, we had the Veritech fighter, which to this day, in whatever iteration you're looking at, is one of the most popular mechs of all time. And for me, and I think for a lot of people, the Cyclones from the Genesis Climber Most Beta New Generation run is still considered one of the most fun designs in a mecha. And Adam, I know too, you're a big fan from the Masters and / Southern Cloths arc, the Veritech hover tanks.
Oh, that's just the beautiful mecha. I mean, it's an ugly duckling, but it's also beautiful in the way that it's designed to basically be what it is. It's a cavalry piece. It's a piece to go out and be an armored, howitzer, basically. And then when it goes into its different modes of both guardian or basically tank to guardian mode and then to battleoid, we're talking about, particularly from the old Palladium game, a weapon that had so many shields, it's very hard to take it out.
Yeah, no, very much so.
And the Ajax, Ajax was just a beautiful piece.
Yeah, you had a lot of the battleoids as well, which have an interesting history in their own right, because a lot of the battleoids were also used within the BattleTech RPG game. But one of the more interesting things that happened with the Robotech license for a while was Harmony Gold was looking to boost their funds. They actually loaned the ability to create some of the Robotech figures to Playmates as part of their Exo Squad line.
They did, and
they gave a lot of the Destroids to Exo Squad, but they also gave the hover tank and a non-transportable formable version of the Veritech fighter, which was really hokey looking. I'm going to be honest with you. It's probably one of the worst versions of the Veritech fighter we've ever had.
Got to say a big thanks to also to Kyle for reminding me of the actual show Exo Squad, because I think, you know, me being in high school, it took us about 2 hours to get to high school each day. And so we missed a lot of those, Exo Squad was showing in the early 90s on Channel 7. So we didn't get to see it a lot. Now, I saw it occasionally on the Saturday mornings, but now I got the box set last year, and it's a bloody good little show.
Yeah, it's kind of steals from the spirit of Robotech and the fact it really deals with war and it has some more of adult-type themes in it. So again, kind of Robotech influencing other things. But, you know, again, we got come back to Robotech. You have the amazing mecha designs, and you have amazingly well-written characters, whether it's Rick Hunter, Roy Fokker, Lisa Hayes, Admiral Global, Max Sterling, and Miria, and Britai, and the Zentradi in Macross, Dana Sterling in Southern Cross, and of course, you have Scott Bernard and Rand, and so many of those other characters from New Generation.
Monk.
Yeah, Lunk. You have Rook. You have Lancer. Just great written characters. And of course, if you're talking Robotech, you also got to talk about the music, and not just the music of Lin-Manuel May and Yellow Dancer as far as the vocal side, but the amazing scores of Robotech. It's still to this day, in my opinion, one of the most beautifully scored anime ever done.
You know, folks, I've got the 30th anniversary edition, which has got, not only has it got the songs, we're talking about, you know, some really amazing. So you got Rebecca Forstadt, obviously did a lot of the stuff with Min Mei, My Time to Be a Star, The Venom Life, To Be in Love, It's You, We Will Win, you know, all those classic songs. But also Michael Bradley, who is Yellow Dancer's singing voice. And it's interesting to sort of like to see that those musics not only carry through those, but they carry through Masters as well, where Bowie Grant is basically the musician of that. Each had their own musical sort of part. And so that's coming from that, but also the orchestral stuff of Ulpio Minucci, who just did such an amazing job with, I think they never recaptured that same sound from the original soundtracks. They tried with Shadow Chronicles. It was still a good soundtrack, but there's something organic about that sound, something fun and something very 80s.
Yeah, and the thing is, let's take a minute too to recognize Robotech 2 The Sentinels, which is one of the more bizarre aspects of Robotech, in that The Sentinels were based off a series of books that were written for Robotech, mostly by Jack McKinney. And what ended up happening with Sentinels is because they couldn't secure the right, there was no more Macross done. So it was fresh animation, and they couldn't secure the rights to continue using the characters how they look. So Sentinels, they all have a very different look and the kind of more modern look. Sentinels was designed to be another 85 episode series, and it just couldn't get the financial backing. What they did do was they made about 4 episodes, which they combined into the movie Robotech 2 The Sentinels, which is kind of just basically an early storyline of it. And actually, when we had the Robotech Shadow Chronicles, there's aspects of that still tie into events that happened in Sentinels. But the problem with Shadow Chronicles was they were expecting people to have read the Robotech comics or that covered Sentinels or had read the books. So there was a lot of confusion about what was going on with Shadow Chronicles. But one of the things that I remember greatly too about Robotech 2 The Sentinels was the music of Robotech 2 The Sentinels, where they went with more of a synthesizer style music. Mm-hmm. And I know it was on the 25th anniversary soundtrack collection for Robotech. And I thoroughly enjoyed that music as well. And I actually like some of the animation that they did for Robotech 2 The Sentinels. And I really hope that someday we can get a proper version of the Sentinels done, because I really think that truly is where the next thing for Robotech animation should lie. Let's get Sentinels done, and let's get Sentinels done properly.
Well, it was done properly by Jack McKinney, as far as I'm concerned. It's a bloody good series of novels, folks. If you haven't got into it, you should. I've always said Harmony Gold needs to sit down the voice cast and just put out some audiobooks. Get those, you know, or even just...
Yeah.
Hour-long audio versions.
I would snag all those up in a heartbeat.
Oh, without a doubt. So let's talk about the characters. So we've talked about, obviously, ones that we love, but let's talk about why they're important and why these resonated so well. It's because they were mortal. All right? These are not superheroes with, kryptonite powers or, you know, expensive bank accounts to make Batmobiles, all that sort of stuff. These were just like the average Joe. They went out there. Yes, they had 40-foot robots to use, but for the most part, it was normal. So let's have a chat about the life of Ben Dixon. Ben Dixon himself is a conscript in the Robotech Defense Force. He's one who is a grunt, basically, up against the Zentradi, serving aboard the STF-1. His boss is Rick Hunter. And through the episodes, we get to see his friendships build. We get to see also his heroic prowess. He's not exactly the greatest pilot. If anything, he's probably the worst of the bunch between Rick, Max, and himself in that Vermilion Squadron. But what he lacks there, he more than shows up in his backing up of his friends and will always put himself before others. I put others before himself. Whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, no, and I mean, but that's and that's the thing. And I remember when they killed Bendix, and we had already had the death of Roy Fokker happen. And no, actually, no, I'm sorry, Bendix's death did happen.
No, I think you're right. No, it was Fokker first.
Yeah. So when Roy Fokker passed, it kind of opened a lot of eyes because it's like anybody was like, "Wow, they killed this major character." Yep. But then I think it made it where when Ben Dixon died, it made it a little bit more palpable. But here's the other aspect of that. Ben Dixon's death was very graphic for that time frame. And it weighed differently because on the main character of Rick Hunter, because it was a subordinate of Rick Hunter, not just... Mm-hmm. A friend. It was one of his subordinates. So there was the military aspect of it too, that he felt responsible for Ben Dixon's life. And I know they played up on that pretty well in the series. In fact, it led to one of the major conversation episodes between Lisa and Rick.
Yeah. And he almost left the Robotech Defense Force over it. You know, he thought, well, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? I've lost a pal, a friend, it might have been a subordinate to me, but yeah, this is like a brother. You know, and Ben and Max were like brothers to him all the way through, no matter what happens. And we see that as the story goes on. And what I think is that's what resonated with us. You know, the death of Roy shook things up so much. Never been done before. We see something similar in the Transformers movie in 85, but that's after this.
Yeah, but I think when you're talking the death of Optimus Prime in Transformers movie 85, there is no animated death in the 80s that's going to match that death. I think obviously some stuff that's happened with Disney later with the Lion King and things like that, but the death of Optimus Prime is still one of the most powerful animated deaths of all time. Interesting when we talk about the characters, because I think this is something, the character aspect of it was the thing that really brought down the Robotech Master storyline, because I don't think of the three arcs, that's the one that just has always felt the weakest. And I think a part of that is it was hard to really identify with any of the characters in Robotech Masters, because I think for a lot of people, they were just a little annoying. Even Dana Sterling, who in the Robotech universe is the daughter of Max and Myria, but there was something about how the voice actress portrayed Dana and things like that. But I think you get back to a lot of interesting character development, not so much with when you're dealing with death in New Generation, but you're dealing with a humanity that has been defeated and a humanity that is willing to sell out its fellow man for survival. I think that's one of the more intriguing and adult-based themes coming out of New Generation. And obviously through all three shows, the heaviness and the cost of war. In those shows.
Without a doubt. Look, I think one of the things that struck with me through all three, I like all three pretty much equally. I do like Masters more than the others, and there's a reason. It's because here's a cocky humanity who destroyed the run of, especially the last run of Chiron there, and they're rebuilding. You know, they're starting to get back on top of things, and the cockiness is that they're going to go out and stomp them on the head at Tyrol and take on, you know, obviously with the REF doing what they've got to do, the SDF 3 and all that. But for me, what makes that series, there's no real characters that stand out as much as Rick and Lisa and Max, but there's some real personalities. Leonard, so Commander Leonard, for example, very much that's sort of stoic person that's not going to let anyone ruin their chances of continuing. Then you've got General Rolf Emerson, who obviously is the, you know, he's the kind of father figure. He's trying to look after his troops, but still toe the line. You've got Dana Sterling, who's the closest we have to Rick in it. You know, she's also a little bit of Roy in her performance. You know, she's tough, but she's also that young sort of exuberance. We've got Bowie, who doesn't want to be there, but Angelo Dante, Now, there's a character. Angelo is just like, look, what are we doing this for? Why? You know, he says, if the commander says this, we got to do this. Great characters. Then we have Marie, obviously. She's great in it too. We have Sean, who's kind of like the runabout James Bond type of guy who's, you know, trying to get all the action, but also at the same time, he, when it comes to the crunch, is a great mecha pilot. He's actually one of the best of the team. So there's all that. But then we've also got, from the other side, we see the Robotech Masters, the clones, and we get to start to see their society, right? And the great thing about their society is we get to see why they are the way they are, what the Invid Flare of Life does to them, and at the end of the day, Zor Prime. So it's interesting. I just think the only thing that makes this part of the series fall flat is just a little bit short.
Yeah. I think the ending, and I think something that of the three shows, Robotech Masters would have benefited the most of Sentinels being done properly. Because I think there's a lot of things that happen in Sentinels that, if you have to remember, the things that are happening since in Sentinels are concurrent to what's happening in Robotech Masters on Earth and in New Generation as well. So I think I think Robotech Masters would have really benefited from Sentinels being going on at the same time. I think it would have cleared up a lot of questions for people because there were things that were addressed in Sentinels that actually clear up a lot of things that happened in Robotech Masters.
Oh, without a doubt. I think what's interesting too is as we get to Invid in particular, we start to see some of the legacy of what's come before. Jonathan Wolf, perfect example, great character. And we see the corruption of those characters. Try and do a little bit like Lando Calrissian, do something for the benefit of others, but he's sacrificing people at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and of course, some of those characters do happen to move on to Robotech to the Sentinels as well in the books. But then we get to the Invid invasion, which I think people like so much because you've got that rebellion thing going on. You've got the Star Wars rebellion aspect of it. And of course, it helps that you have the phenomenal mechas, not only that with the Alpha and Beta Fires, but obviously the Cyclones, which are still incredibly identifiable and still one of the greatest mecha designs, I think, that's been done in anime. And in fact, a lot of people I know of think if you're going to have a mecha, the Cyclone is actually probably the closest thing to a realistic mecha type to make.
Which was based on a real motorcycle, folks, actually. If you look it up, you can actually find it. I believe it was a Kawasaki, if I remember right. You can actually look that up on Wiki. I think I've shared that photo before of what the original one looked like. So it's looked like a lot of those early Japanese hybrid motorcycles are just amazing.
Yeah, so, but I when it's all said and done, Robotech was just, it's been a massive influencer ever since it came out, and it's one of those shows that will always be there for a new generation to fall in love with all over again, and it's going to be very interesting, I think, Adam, over the next few years as the other, as Macross starts really getting more involved here in the U.S. distribution and international, just a better international distribution from this, and what's going to happen is with Robotech as far as new animated, if that when we're going to see that, and a live action film, which is still very much in the works. It's just a matter of probably when, not if, but when. And I know that a lot of the people who are behind the creative forces behind Robotech, obviously Carl Masek has passed several years back now, but a lot of the people who were kind of the grandfathers of Robotech, including Tony Oliver and Richard Epcar, really do want to be able to return back to this property and see it given to the fans who love it so much and give the fans what they want to see.
That's right. We want to see it flourish again, folks, in an animated form. It's the best place for it. You know, I'm not too keen on a live action Robotech personally myself because, you know, again, like Transformers, it needs to be adapted a certain way. And I don't have the answers to how it needs to because I love the format already.
I'm going to say this. I do believe that it's more doable now than it was 10 years ago, especially after seeing the first 10 minutes of the Bumblebee movie that came out with everything on Cybertron and how that was done. I have more confidence we're at that point, technological-wise, that we can pull off a proper Robotech film. But it's a matter of getting the right actors involved and the right people involved, and that's kind of the scary proposition about a live-action Robotech right now.
Without a doubt. So, folks, in the meantime, go and check out the Jack McKinney novels, which are out there again in paperback, folks, or on ebook. You get that everywhere. And, of course, got to say, can't wait to check out the Blu-rays. We will be doing a follow-up to this episode with our review of the new ones coming out from Funimation. Can't wait. It's fantastic. Before we sign off, where can we catch you online there, Mr. Wagner?
Of course, you can find me all over the Fandom Podcast Network at fpnet.podbean.com. There I host Culture Clash, our Fandom News and Reviews show. We've got our show True Believers covering everything in the MCU, plus so many other great shows. And of course, personally, you can find me on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram at AKyleFandom.
Folks, check out those links, go on to it. And of course, check out Robotech.com for all the latest on Robotech. They do a wonderful job of putting a wide myriad of different stuff up there for you, the fan, to check out, and it's always exciting. I'm the Leela Mullet. We'll catch you next time here on the show. Before we go, I want to say a big thanks to all of you for checking out the last couple episodes, and stay tuned because Kevin will be with us very, very soon for, of course, Tom Selleck double feature, of course, of Quigley Down Under and Runaway. And Runaway we will right now, folks. We'll catch you next time here on the Leela Mullet Podcast.
G'day folks, hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Fandom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rice and Lee Fillingsus on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Wars, Fandom Flashback show. Enzo, our look at the NFL, American football. Also Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery and of course Picard, plus the Orville. Also the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well. Hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing, The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Leela Mullet podcast looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at. There you can also check out great articles that we put up to there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Fandom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network's The Leela Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.